Hello, and welcome to Dice Masters United. I'm Spug.
I'm Ben.
I'm James.
And I'm Peter.
Coming up in this episode...
A huge weekend of Dice Masters action is in the bag, so we'll be reflecting on the main points from the home of Elvis.
We'll be talking to Dana Patton, a.k.a. General Nemesis, a.k.a. the person who's been my nemesis online for like the last month, who was crowned US National Champion and with a whisker away from also sweeping the world's title.
I thought I was your nemesis.
Yeah, you are. So I have lots of nemesis.
And we'll be running through the big Secret Wars card reveals that came out over the course of the weekend.
All that and more in the latest episode of Dice Masters United. Ah.
Okay, well, welcome back, everybody. It's really good to have you with us. And we are coming to you slightly later than usual because of the huge weekend of Dice Masters action that's just been taking place in Memphis, Tennessee. Yes, it's been the World Championships held at the Graceland Convention Center, the first in-person World Championship event since 2019, right, Ben, when you were crowned champion?
Yeah, in person is correct, because I also won it online in 2020.
Oh,
let's not forget that.
Lest we forget, yes, indeed. And so anybody who's got anything more than a passing interest in Dice Masters will know that there's been all the action going on over in Graceland. And we not only had the World Championships, and firstly, we should congratulate Laurier Burrell, CCM millions of seven, millions of zeros and a seven on the end on Discord for... claiming the World Championship crown to become the Dice Masters World Champion. Congratulations to Laurier in what sounds like a very intense Master Mold face-off. But more on Master Mold later. Also, congratulations to Dana Patton, a.k.a. General Nemesis, another Canadian who claimed on this occasion the US National Championships. It seems like the Canadians came to play over in on the other side of the Atlantic, and Dana was crowned US National Champion on the Friday. And I think we should also congratulate Petrus Chan, who yet another Canadian, I think, mm-hmm. who won the Pauper Tournament, and Patrick Barley, who finally did something for the Americans and claimed the Global Escalation Prize over the course of the weekend. But it's been a huge weekend. One thing we were slightly saddened by is that there wasn't any live streaming or action as there has been in previous years. So it became a case of following the results on Discord, and everybody was desperate for updates. But it's been a huge weekend. Should we just start by just kind of rounding up kind of the big takeaways? I mean, Master Mold is kind of hard to ignore, Ben, when he totally dominated, I think, on this occasion.
Well, I guess we should probably be open about the fact that most of us had been playtesting pretty heavily with Dana.
Mm.
I think I said on the last podcast I could name all 10 cards that would win the World Championship.
You weren't far off.
Even on Laurier's team, I got 7 of them. So. Yes. And then Dana changed, I think, 2 things from what we were playtesting. It'd be interesting to hear why he changed those 2 couple of things around. But yeah, Master Mold, Mr. Sinister, Robin, Villainous Pact, Slingers, Dark Phoenix, that kind of turbo by Master Mold very quickly.
Mm.
And then just spam him as much as possible. Yeah. I mean, like I said, again, this... the amount of playtesting we did against Dana and just couldn't beat him, really. The only way to beat him was basically get lucky with Barry. And win turn 3 or 4 or whatever it was before he could go quicker than him, which isn't very easy to do. Yeah, Master Mold is very unstoppable. And basically, Vinless Pact has no real answer. It's so quick that... even if you could get a bunch of villains out, you couldn't get them out quick enough to stop that Villainous Pact.
Yeah, yeah.
And the number of tokens he generates.
That's true. So we had, just in terms of the stats, thank you to Nick Wiley and particularly Jordo over at DM North, who was crunching the numbers from all the events and putting together a handy spreadsheet with all the team information. And we know that from the 21 players who took part in the World Championships, there were 11 Master Mold teams, mm-hmm. And I think pretty much all of the teams that made it into the last eight were Master Mold based teams. There could be one or two others that crept in, but pretty much it was very much a Master Mold dominated meta. I mean, you mentioned, Ben, that
I think it might have been four or five. I seem to remember counting.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah, it was different, a bit different from the US Nats the day before.
Yeah.
Definitely people that saved. People had saved the Master Molds for the World Championship event, or
I was thinking of that.
I think after Dana won the US Nats the day before, then everyone decided to play Mold. Well, I don't know what happened exactly, but definitely people were saving the Molds for the big World Championship event.
Yeah. We don't know what the psychology was there, how much copycatting was going on, or how much this is what people always planned to do all along. I mean, as multiple people have said, it's very hard to copy a team the night before and then do extremely well with it if you haven't really practiced it. But
then, I mean, it's also, you're saying the Master Mold is so, in a matchup with Master Mold, there's very little that like an opponent can do to kind of delay it outside of DKEN, which I think I also saw a lot of play, which is pretty exciting, I suppose.
Yeah,
I don't think a lot of people would have predicted that before.
No.
And although we knew in testing against Dana that DKEN was fairly useful, and actually in the Dice Fight XL we did, DKEN was pretty useful there as well.
For Klingon.
It's just that Master Mold matchup is so wild and swingy that if you miss a Master Mold and your opponent gets it, you're basically four characters down because they have a mold and three tokens on them.
Yeah, it can get out of hand pretty quickly, can't it? And I think, you know, Villainous Pact hasn't been massively played as the action. Obviously people have used the global since time immemorial, I think, but the action, which is a four cost, your opponent chooses one non-villain affiliated character die, all other non-villain character dice cannot block this turn, devastating.
It's always been a good secondary win condition, hasn't it? But it's always been played as a secondary win condition, kind of.
Yes.
Like, my win condition's not working, I'm getting bogged down, let's switch to a Villainous Pact.
Yeah.
And try and swing through for the win.
But
the thing is that global paired with Wolverine Global on turn one, Animus Sinister makes that kind of turbo turn two.
Yeah.
That you were doing with Barry.
Yeah.
Effective and works for Master Mold as well. One interesting thing with Laurier's team is he does not put the Wolverine Global on.
Right.
So he only had the Villainous Pact.
Global. Yeah.
So I wonder whether he just kind of decided that enough people would have the Wolverine Global, or that he'd get by without the prep. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see how he played it. Obviously, we don't have any video for it.
No. But
interesting to see how he played that without that kind of turn two guarantee.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you go first, you can just...
Yeah, exactly.
It's so just getting second, obviously. Yeah.
So it makes sense because half the time you're not even using that Wolverine Global.
Not if you've got Villainous Pact. No, that's right, yeah.
If you're going first. Exactly. So I think that was a clever pivot and lets you put in a secondary defense piece, which probably Typhoid Mary or Tombstone was in his case.
Yeah.
And then I think there's a big shout out for that Robin. That was used on quite a few teams, wasn't it?
It was, the Super Rare Robin. So that Super Rare Robin, is he the only one that's got that discount fielding? It was used for the fielding discount, you know, pay a mask, field a character for free.
No, the rare one does have it as well, and then the Jimmy Olsen with a similar effect.
Oh, that's right. But people were also using this as a backup bit of removal, weren't they, I think, because of his...
Yeah, it's really good removal. Wenfield did just deal number of damage equal to the number of characters you have.
Yeah.
And obviously with the tokens you have out, you're probably going to have a pretty big wall.
Yeah.
And with all the psychics you have, almost sinister.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a good...
So it's a nice little extra removal piece that you don't have to kind of build into your team.
So James, let's come to you. What were your sort of overarching takeaways from the big weekend?
Well, first of all, big thank you to Nick, I think, because in the absence of streaming, apparently maybe something was recorded, but certainly nothing was streamed. So it was nice of Nick to sort of drip feed us stuff in the Discord so that we could feel involved. And it worked out.
Yeah, I'm sure he was super busy with rules questions as well, so he did a very good job of keeping us up to date while still doing the main role.
I was on the edge of my seat, even though we only had pictures. It's still
that was the thing. It was like a bit of information every 45 mm-hmm. minutes to an hour, but it worked out all right. It meant you could do stuff in between.
Yeah.
Yes, but the other interesting thing I was thinking about was the differences between Dana, who, as we mentioned, won on Friday and came second in Worlds, and Logier's team, because they had very similar teams, but there were 3 points of difference, which were, as Ben mentioned, the Laurier dropped the Wolverine, presumably relying off other people's or just not bothering about it. He also didn't have Dana's Starro, which was that was Dana's flex spot. I think he tried various things in that spot while we were testing. And the third difference was, what did I say it was?
Mr. Mine didn't
have Mr. Mine, the rare Mr. Mine, which was presumably there in case of Barry, mostly, I suppose.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that was probably quite a good call on Logier's part, because there weren't that many Barrys, and they didn't make any resurgence from one event to the next. In fact, the number's probably pretty much the same, I think. Like a couple.
Do you know how many Barry Allens there were in the in the World Championship event? Out of a field of 21 players, there was a grand total of one.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
The number's even dropped.
Wow. Which I was staggered by, to be honest.
Yeah, it was.
I mean,
for sure.
They don't have your gift, obviously, Spug.
Yeah.
Turbo Barry. rolling millions of sidekicks. That's obviously what it is.
I mean, Barry is very boom or bust, I feel like.
For sure.
Yeah.
He is.
So I think if you're going to play that style, you go Master Mold anyway, I think, logically.
Yeah, Mold is more, I think, consistent. But anyway, all I wanted to say was, what was interesting for me was the differences between those teams. So that allowed Logier 3 extra spots, which he used for control in the form of Black Widow, Widow's Hunt, cheap masks and the spin down. Typhoid Mary, which I can imagine might have played a part, but I suppose we will find out when we speak to Dana. And Tombstone, the Intimidate rare Tombstone. So he had, I think those were pretty
well good. I'm interested, because I think Mr. Mine was probably a sensible choice in theory because of the Barry, but also it does let you copy the When Attacks ability of Master Mold.
If it's there.
But it's also a villain as well.
Yeah.
For the villain's pack, there's a little bit of blocking there. I mean, because I don't really see the sense in Black Widow over Mr. Mime, particularly because spin down on level one characters is not very useful.
Well, and it's rubbish. It's useless against tokens, isn't it? Because you can't spin down.
You can't spin those down, but also, I mean, so one of the problems I was having in playtesting against Dana was the fact that you have a wall of psychics. So I get the idea that Black Widow reduces that.
Yeah.
But it gives them energy that they can use then to miss Sinister.
That's right, yeah.
So all this spin down removal, like Pip the Troll, Spider-Man, is not very useful because it removes, it just comes back with energy anyway from the miss Sinister. So I'd be interested to hear what his justification for Black Widow was.
Yeah, no, that will be.
I guess the fact is that Mr. Mind is expensive to field. Black Widow
can be.
You don't want to field anyway. You want her rotating as energy.
Yeah.
She does something. She does something even though. But then maybe I'd rather the Poison Ivy, personally.
I mean, we don't know how much even Laurier bought that. Black Widow. No, it might have been one of those.
Yeah, Typhoid Mary and Tombstone both make sense as control pieces. They're both geared up against Master Molds, whereas I think Dana with the Starro was more concerned at wider things, not just Master Mold.
Yeah.
Mirror matches.
Typhoid, I mean, Typhoid Mary is a nice call in if you just need to blank a Deacon yeah. for one turn.
Yeah.
Yeah, or even Miss Sinister.
Yeah.
Although, actually.
Yeah, it probably had his own.
He had his own.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So, Peter, what were your sort of big takeaways from the weekend?
Well, yeah, Master Mold was there as expected. There were 11 out of 21 teams running Master Mold. And I think
in the world.
Yeah, in worlds. And I think the complete top eight was Master Mold teams.
Yeah.
So bonkers. that is not great for a healthy meta, but we only have three sets at the moment. So I think it'll settle down once we get other stuff. But for now, yeah, Master Mold is where it's at.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know for a fact that there's something that's coming that hates on Globals.
Right.
At least, and there's distraction coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And as we'll talk about a bit later, a force block is coming.
Also, yeah.
Which is all good. So that will hopefully change the meta. But, I mean, even with those things in place, there's still a question mark over the dominance of Master Mold. I mean, what do people think in terms of whether Master Mold is just too strong and should be banned, Ben?
I think it's very strong. I think tokens are very tokens previously were quite vulnerable.
Because of Intimidate and Gazer. Yeah.
So if we get something like that back, if we have a distraction global, slow again down those big swingy teams. Yeah, it's the amount it can generate at a time. Is the scary thing.
Yeah,
it is.
So, can you have anything that competes with being able to make three tokens a turn? Especially with, I mean, the downside of Master Mold is his expense.
Yeah.
Both purchasing and fielding, but those have been heavily negated by Miss Sinister and then the Robin Global.
Yeah.
I'm really surprised no one ran the Ferris broadcast.
Yeah, that's on my list of things to talk about, actually. Okay. Let's do that now. I mean, I was really surprised that Nefarious broadcast wasn't there simply to prevent some Mr. Sinister action. What were you thinking there, Ben?
Yeah, in playtesting, one of the things that disrupted Dana was that Nefarious broadcast to take away the Mr. Sinister. If you get there, they're using that in tandem with something like the Black Widow, which could churn out their psychic. So the problem is, with Miss Sinister Global, you have such a thin bag that Master Mold's coming back around. Even if it goes through, even if it, whatever happens is coming back around, or Villainous Pact is coming back around, even if they miss it.
That's the horrible thing for me. Sorry to interrupt, but I remember playing Ultraman, which was a six cost, and if I didn't roll my Ultraman, which of course I didn't, I was done. I was done, basically. But, you know, playing with Dana, he just misses his Master Mold. It is no biggie. It'll just be back next turn. Sick.
Yeah.
Because of Mr. Sinister. Horrible.
So I'm surprised. No, I guess people didn't use it because it could be used against people.
Yeah.
But I'm surprised no one dropped like a Slingers.
Yeah.
The Force Attack, presumably, because there were enough Force Attacks going around. I'm surprised no one did that. No one dropped that for Nefarious Broadcasters in the mirror match.
Yeah. And there are enough. People. I mean, there are enough Force Attacks. You know, there's a Doomsday, there's a Doctor Strange.
There is. Those are susceptible to Typhoid Mary.
Yeah,
of course. Yeah,
that's true.
But I mean, there were so few Typhoid Marys, weren't they? I mean,
yeah, but
I think there were three in the World Championship.
You don't know that in advance.
You don't.
No, but I think after the US, Nats, Dana was such a strong showing there.
Yeah,
by all accounts. That I think people could have, I mean, we sort of knew that was going to be the winning team, at least the Miss Sinister. You knew about five of the cards that were definitely going to be there.
Yeah.
So knowing that, I mean, I'm surprised no one tried to do something flexible just to shut that off.
Yeah. James, would you ban Master Mold?
You know what? It's interesting. Would I do it? What I would do is some testing, and I think maybe I actually will do this.
Always the scientist, eh, James? You want more data. You want more data.
Data. So I might do some videos if I can find some people to play with me. And I might suggest it for a couple of dice fights, maybe to take various things out. So, you know, eliminate Mr. Sinister. What difference that makes in the modern meta. Introduce modern plus Gazer, for example. Modern plus Scarlet Witch, careful what you wish for, because maybe we need a little bit of action hate, given that Villainous Bact has become Master Mold is one thing for sure, but then the final nail in the coffin is, oh bugger, you've just bought Villainous Bact. There's nothing I can do to stop that in the current meta, so maybe we need a bit of action hate. So I think it would be really interesting to try out these things and see what is making the difference. And it's not as if WizKids tend to rush into banning things anyway. Though they did say they'd keep it on a watch list.
Yeah,
they did.
Maybe we'll see.
I mean, that's the only thing that's making me think actually they're going to ban it, because it was on a watch. It's on a watch list. I mean, if they failed to see that it was on all eight teams in, what more do you need? Like a justification on a watch list? Okay, this is pretty powerful. I would like to see them release more sets before they do it.
Yeah,
because if you think about it, previously it was. In the last iteration of Modern, it was around and people still went for Becky and Godcatcher over it.
Yeah. I mean, that's totally true. You made that point very well earlier before we started recording, that Master Mold and Mr. Sinister have been around for a little while.
I mean, you could have made that team what would be added, Deacon, but that's not a part of the win condition. It's part of the kind of defensive mechanics.
Yeah.
But was there anything else that's been added? Mr. Sinister was around, Master Mold was around, Villainous Pact was around, Singers were around.
Robin for the fielding.
Yeah, maybe that's what makes the difference.
No, but we had the Reboot Gully Man for that.
Oh, yeah, we did.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Okay. I mean, we speculated about whether it was Gazer with his, you know, a two-cost Intimidator was maybe putting people off from playing too many tokens, but it never really stopped people from playing Godcatcher, did it?
Yeah. And it's much more effective against Godcatcher, because Godcatcher makes fewer tokens.
Yeah, that's right. Peter, would you ban Master Mold?
At this time, I would not. I feel that banning the enabler makes more sense than banning the actual win con.
Okay. James said the same thing earlier.
Yeah, but it's still, because Not only does it enable Master Mold, but it also enables Barry. So otherwise, I think if you ban Master Mold, everyone's going to be playing Barry. And sure, it's easier to counter maybe, but just going to have the same thing with something else.
But this is the only good ramp we have.
Yeah.
there is that. Leave ramp alone.
Yeah.
you can double prep.
Yeah, save my.
I think the thing is, Miss Sinister, just too generic is too strong.
Yeah, it's just too good. Like
a bolt and one generic.
Yeah, definitely.
Or something.
Make it limit it in some way, either with the energy that's required, or the number of times you can do it per turn, or whether it's your turn or the opponent's.
Yeah, something like that.
Yes, maybe not ban Mr. Sinister, but tweak it somehow, but they don't really have a history of doing
that. No.
Or, to be fair, I think if you had, okay, I don't want to be too, like, if you had Danny and a force attack, force block.
Danny Moonstar.
Yeah, Danny Moonstar. If you had a force block and something that made them really vulnerable if they just had a bunch of sidekicks.
Yeah.
I think that could be telling.
Yes.
Just because the Mist Sinister, it thins your bag out so much, but some of those have to be sidekicks, right? You end up, no matter how much you're clearing stuff with Dark Phoenix to buy stuff, you always end up with four or five sidekicks in your field.
Mm.
So you can punish people.
That might explain Becky as well, because sidekicks were a liability, weren't they?
Yeah.
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 I don't know if that explains anything. But if you've got something like Becky who can re-roll them and do damage for it and wants psychics to force block,
yeah,
overcrush into, that makes a difference.
Yeah,
maybe Mary Shazam. I've got a Mary Shazam. Maybe.
But yeah,
force block will come into its own.
Yeah.
Well, that could be interesting, right? So I think that there's still stuff to be tested with it and unfolded with it. But it would not surprise me if they did ban it.
Yeah.
Having said it's on a watch list.
Or at least maybe
Matt and Thor, wasn't it?
There's another option is to suspend it for the time being until more sets are released. Yeah.
Yeah.
Being a very naughty boy.
Yeah.
It's on the naughty step. He's gonna put it on the naughty step. Where it can go and think about what it's done.
And come exactly.
Back, hopefully an improved person. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's definitely going to be the case that when Secret Wars comes out, the meta will change considerably because of the, well, we know that there's a distraction global coming back that pay a mask target attacking character dies no longer attacking, which will help control players keep their control pieces in the field more easily. And now we also know, and we'll talk about this again a bit later, there is a force block coming in the next set as well. So that will definitely make a big difference in terms of people being able to retain control pieces in the field, which, you know, in this current meta is very, very difficult, yeah, as we've talked about earlier.
I would say in the absence of WKOs and whatnot, there's very little pressure on WizKids to do anything at all, because what
yeah, when's the next tournament? Next year's Worlds, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what will happen is the players themselves will just come up with their own bans, won't they? I suspect, yeah, there'll be some more online tournaments, and I suspect things like Master Mold will almost certainly be banned from that, you know, whenever the next two team takedown is, for example.
Yeah.
And I think we are due one of those. Can't wait to get cracking on a two team takedown again. I wouldn't be surprised at all if the decision is to ban Master Mold, or maybe even ban Mr. Sinister. James, you could get your wish there.
Well, I'm going to do my testing. And we'll see.
Was there anything else that surprised people wasn't on available, wasn't around as much?
Well, we've talked about Barry, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one Barry out of 21 teams I was shocked by.
And the Nefarious Broadcast, I think.
And Broadcast, for sure.
How many rare Poison Ivies were there?
Hardly any, I think.
Hardly any, yeah. I mean, expecting it more wasn't those.
Yeah, but it just wasn't a good counter to Villainous Pact.
No.
That is true.
Jean Grey was one that surprised me, because I thought maybe that might be a thing.
The one he who makes the globals more expensive.
Yeah,
that was the four cost. He had that on his anti-monitor Deathbird team. I like that team. Well done, Ian. Good on
the yeah, because the Pip the Troll also does the same thing.
Yeah.
But is vulnerable to force attack, whereas Jean Grey actually has some stats behind her.
Yeah.
Same with Lilandra. I think there's a couple, but making people pay for using those things.
Yeah, I mean, there was only, I think, two copies of Lilandra in any of the teams. I mean, again, it's the same old problem. Keeping it in the field is difficult. But as you say, Ben, she has got some quite beefy attack stats. So
yeah, well, you have to pay the two life to force her to attack.
Yeah.
Plus the whatever attack you take, 3 to 5, I think it is.
It's more than that.
Insizable. Yeah. And then the other thing I was really surprised.
That's not a word.
The other thing I think about, the other thing that I thought I never got to playtest this, is the 7-cost Shazam as a way of removing tokens permanently.
James did do that, didn't you?
It's not all that. I've got to say, it's a fun team. Or, you know, to be fair, I'm not the greatest pilot or team builder, but I did try it. And the problem against tokens specifically is that it takes 2.5 characters just to remove one bloody token. So basically, you have to have 3 characters before you can get rid of one token.
If you can't roll characters,
it's up to 2 range. Sorry?
If you could roll characters, could roll characters.
I'm not the best person to test it.
Yeah. I think it would have been interesting.
It's a great team. It's a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Yeah.
But there were so many flex. I mean, there are 3 flex spots on that team.
Yeah.
Maybe Typhoid Mary and Tombstone were the answers that were needed on the day, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, we will find out, we hope, in due course, how much utility those extra slots were and whether there were other things that might have gone into those spots. But yeah, that was Master Mold. We await eagerly, I think, the release of the next set to kind of move this meta on. I think all of us probably would agree with that. It's autumn time, allegedly, isn't it? What do we know?
December. What's now, the latest? I think.
December.
Yeah.
And somewhere else in the latest gaming magazine, I think it said quarter four. So right. If you're lucky. They're not got a great track record of hitting Christmas. So.
Yeah. Yeah. But all in all, a huge weekend of Dice Masters has just happened, and great to see people there. I feel it's a shame that we ended up with the US Nationals and the World Championships basically on back-to-back days, which basically means you ended up with exactly the same players and in a lot of cases playing the same teams. But yeah. I suppose we are in unprecedented times and
true.
On another occasion.
Yeah, it's not really World Championship without me, is it?
I would just like to mention that I'm now the only reigning champ on the pod.
I know, we've all like that's true.
Good grief. Well, I won Dice Fight XL3, let's not forget. In the teeth of some fierce.
I haven't won anything for ages, yeah.
Me neither, and I don't think I'm going. I think my competitive days might well be behind me. Just the thought of actually, I mean, I know I have my issues, but just the thought of, like, first of all, being in close proximity to that many people for such a long time, but then having to concentrate for that long, that would give me a terrible headache, and I'd be in bed before the top cut.
Yeah, the fact that Laurier made it to, I mean, it's a difficult thing to do to get to a final. The fact that Laurier got to back-to-back Worlds finals is pretty impressive.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, very good going. I mean, he has had an amazing year in the sense of, I think he's won both of the two team takedown tournaments that have gone on so far this year. And
bit of a try hard, you know, really. Play something fun for once, Laurier. Yeah. Stop net decking teams.
I'm pretty sure he had his team
as well.
I'm sure he had his team arranged before actual Worlds. He just played Barry at Nats to throw people off.
Yeah,
I think that's probably true. And actually, you only need to read his "What have you played?" thing, where it seems like he turns up at his local store on a weekly basis
and wrecks everyone. Yes,
left, right, and center. With a random assortment of cards, it seems.
I think he has to hold back, otherwise they'll ban him from the store.
Good stuff. All right, well, that is the World Championships in the bag for another year. So shall we move on to the next segment? Okay, well, we are very excited to welcome on to DM United Dana Patton, aka General Nemesis, who not only stomped everyone in the US Nationals, but also came a whisker away from sweeping the World Championships as well. Perhaps the player of the weekend, if not maybe the world champion himself, but certainly an incredible weekend for Dana. Dana, welcome to the show. It's great to have you here. How are you?
Thank you. No, it's a pleasure to be here. Long-time listener, first-time joiner. So it's good to be on the podcast for once. But yeah, thanks for having me. It's really fun to be here.
So how was your Memphis experience? You know, how did you find the kind of the organization, the whole, just the whole situation of playing in, you know, a major tournament, maybe for the first time, was it in person, something like that for you?
Yeah, strangely, this is going to sound crazy, but this was the first time I had ever played Dice Masters in person at all.
Wow.
In a tournament or otherwise.
That's pretty natural.
not including games, just with my wife at home. I started playing during the pandemic, so I've played a lot online, but never played in person. So that was a cool change for sure. Like a lot of things, playing in person is definitely better. As much as the game does really well online, there's just something a little bit different about playing in person. So that was a pretty cool experience for sure. A weird first time to play in person, but definitely cool experience.
Yeah, there's no breaking you in gently, was there? You're straight in with US nationals. And obviously, as a proud Canadian, it must have given you great satisfaction to storm the home of Elvis and come home with that big prize.
For sure, yeah. We had a good Canadian turnout, actually. I think there were five of us there. And between the four events, I think three of them were won by Canadians. It was just Shadow Meld who disrupted our perfect sweep of the weekend. So, yeah, it was good to have a good contingent there. So it was a little bit, at least a North American championship, if not just a U.S. championship.
And how did you find the whole kind of atmosphere, really? Because obviously I've not had the chance to go to Memphis. Ben, you were there, right?
Yeah.
Last time it was held. So you can maybe talk to this a little bit too. But the kind of the atmosphere, what's it like in the hall?
It was cool. It was big. They were, of course, had the Clicks World Championships happening at the same time.
Yeah.
And there were probably a good 200 plus people there for that event. So you walk in and they have big signs about the WizKids World Championships and some very fancy signage displays for, you know, Clicks models and new Clicks releases, giant video screens with some YouTube clips of new Clicks things. There's a repeating trend here. The downside, the hall was cool. The experience is very cool, but the words Dice Masters were not even physically present anywhere in the exhibition hall at all.
Oh, right,
so it very much felt like a small side event to a Clicks tournament. Beyond that, the experience was cool.
Did it take place in a locked cellar guarded by a leopard?
No, we were back in a corner of one of the halls on tables with a different color placemat so that we kind of relegated to the corner of the room.
Did you manage to get into Graceland itself? Do you actually get to go? Because I know they did like a discounted.
Yeah, I did get to go. They had a pre-tournament package that you could buy that gave you a discounted ticket and a bunch of conference exclusive Clicks models. There wasn't a similar package for Dice Masters, unfortunately. But I was able to kind of check out some of the museums and Elvis's house.
Those Clicks kind of models go for a bit, so.
So I hear. It probably would have been a good idea to pick them up and just try and flip them.
Yeah.
But tip for next time.
Was the ice cream as well? That's the other important thing.
Was like freeze-dried ice cream.
Okay. That was a big deal last time. I don't know why. But
it's like dried ice cream balls in a bag. Like, I don't know, for astronauts or something like that.
Well, if it's good enough for Elvis, it's probably not good enough for everybody else. But anyway, let's not get stuck into that. Let's talk about your tournament experience then. You obviously played and won US Nationals. You then played in the Worlds and just came runner-up, losing in the final. What did you play? Did you play similar teams over both tournaments? And, you know, what were the highlights of your, sort of the mainstays of your team, should we say?
Yes, I played the exact same team for both tournaments. We can talk about whether or not that was a good idea, if you like. Mm-hmm. But it was a Master Mold team, and I guess the one difference or flavor of Master Mold was that it used the rare Deken as a defensive piece and a bit of a tech for the mirror match. Went really well, mentioned.
What's Deken's text?
Oh, of course. I can look up the exact text, but the general sense is as long as Deken is in your use pile, you can only take a maximum of 7 damage in a turn. That's the big thing.
Yeah.
That's close enough, I reckon.
That was really nicely, yeah.
So that was particularly good, I think, for this meta against Master Mold teams, against Barry teams. A lot of the big teams seem to want to have one giant turn where they push through for, you know, 20 or more damage in a turn. So it's a good thing that you can kind of just keep, not purchase, and buy it when needed and just shove it in the use pile the turn before you think you're going to lose. And it takes your opponent from being able to swing for 20 damage in one turn and kind of breaks it that they have to do that same amount of damage in 3 separate instances. So it can really be the difference between losing and squeaking out a win.
Did people have much of an answer to that generally, or was it fairly unopposed a lot of the time?
Not on the first day.
Yeah, how many rare deacons were there on the first day?
There were two, just myself and Andy May's team, and we were the two that made it into the final for the U.S. Nationals. And then on day two, there were quite a bit more, I think.
We had a bit of a discussion beforehand, and maybe also with Ben, about the strategy of whether you should play the same team on the first day as on the second day. Clearly you did.
Yeah.
And how do you feel about that? Was that a good decision?
I think it was okay. In this particular case, I knew Master Mold was not a surprise. People were expecting Master Mold. I think the big thing that was a surprise was how strong Deken was. I think a lot of people didn't really think that was going to be as big of a tech piece as it was. But even if I chose to play something else, Andy was still playing those exact same pieces. So the cat was going to get out of the bag either way. So in retrospect, maybe it would have been a good idea not to play it. But in practice, because Andy had a very similar team, I don't think it would have made much of a difference in the result at the end.
How did Laurier handle it in the final? Sorry.
In the final? So he had a very similar team to me day two. He was playing one of the few Barry Allen players on day one, and he switched to Master Mold with Deken on day two. He had a couple of different pieces on his team, I think Typhoid Mary being the most important one. But he didn't buy any of his unique pieces, and I didn't buy any of my unique pieces. And it was basically a lot of similar play, both going for villainous pack plays, both putting Deken in the use pile when needed. I was able to pick up the first game. The second game was a bit of a disaster for me, and I had a first turn bad roll and wasn't able to recover, and it was over pretty quickly. And the third one was a bit of a longer slog back and forth. I was able to get out to a big early lead. I think I was up 20 to 6 life, but my field was really depleted, and he had a massive field. Unfortunately, Master Mold got stuck in my bag, and he kind of just chipped me down over the next couple turns, and it all just slipped away.
We were speculating that maybe the Typhoid Mary, he used that to blank the Deken.
Of the Worlds as well, which I was able to win that game. And he did buy Typhoid Mary in that game to attempt to do that. But it was just a little bit slow. It's strange that Master Mold doesn't need a lot of support. But it is a very energy-intensive team when you're playing in the mirror match, when both teams are always one turn away from winning at any given time, once you have a few tokens in the field. People are really focused on, putting Deken in, which is a 5-cost purchase when needed, but also really focusing on using energy to thin the bag with Mr. Sinister. And there's really not a ton left over after a lot of those plays.
Interesting. Just one question. You mentioned that you played the exact same team on both days. So you didn't change the Staro? Because that's different in the team lists. Because we were speculating about this in our own chat. On the Nats team list, it says the 3-cost, which I thought was a bit weird.
I think that must be an error. I was playing the same the rare Staro in both times.
That makes a lot more sense.
I briefly considered swapping it out the morning of the World Championships for Typhoid Mary, but I went to look in the collection of cards that I brought, and I realized I didn't even bring Typhoid Mary with me, so I kind of made the decision for me. So.
Would you have stuck with the same team with the benefit of hindsight for the World Championships?
I think so. I think Staro was not the most useful overall, just considering the quantity of Master Mold teams that were out there. So I think Typhoid Mary, given the meta of the tournament itself, would have been a better card to have on the team. I don't know if it would have made a huge difference, considering how well most of my games went. But Staro wasn't as particularly useful as I was hoping. I think I only bought it in one of the games against a super rare Thor team.
Well, when we were playing in the kind of playtesting, there wasn't really a lot you could do against your team, even if you had like a team set up to stop the Master Mold. The flex spots weren't that important. I mean, it would just end up being like if your team went well,
what
control you had, it didn't really make that much of a difference.
Yeah. There was a little bit of mutation on day two. I think that was one card that people thought to bring as a potential counter to Deken in particular.
You were a bit worried about that, right? Because Spog did well against you with that.
Yeah. Mutation was a bit of a concern for sure. It definitely could have been a play for sure. I think it's just a little bit risky, as far as I'm concerned, to run Master Mold with mutation as opposed to running with Deken. You don't want to have both on the same team because then you're giving your opponent the pieces to shut off your control piece. But I think not having Deken just really leaves you very vulnerable to an unexpected villainous pack swing. I think it's a little bit too fragile.
Yeah. You playtested with each one of us, didn't you? I think at various points, some more than others. So I think maybe really, I think we can claim this as a DM United victory, can't we?
Absolutely. I know you were considering my application to be an unofficial Canadian member of DM United. So hopefully the results give me a few points in that direction. But no, in all seriousness, I definitely owe all four of you a huge thank you for sure. You were all incredibly generous with your time, you know, coaching me and training me and putting me through the rigor to helping prepare. I think between the four of you, easily I had 60 or 70 practice games in the month and a half leading up to World Championships. And I think that was a very big factor in leading to the success that I did have.
Well, your application has arrived. We'll get back to you, though.
I think Peter's a bit worried. Peter's a bit worried about his position as Ben's nemesis.
Yeah, I mean, it's in the name, isn't it? It's what can we do? So just reflecting on... Go on, Ben.
I was just going to ask, in case we move on, because we talked a little bit about the final of Worlds, but we didn't talk about the final with Andy May of Nats, right?
Yeah.
And oh, yeah, for sure.
Photo. We got a sort of drip feed of what was going on in Discord, obviously, you know, without a video, without any streaming. We didn't really know what was going on, but we got a board state photo with a huge number of tokens on Andy's side of the board. But yeah. And then about, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes later, we know that you'd won. And I was wondering how that happened exactly.
That's the power of Deken. It doesn't matter how many tokens you have if you can only do 7 damage a turn. So we had very similar teams. It was a real chess match of a game. It's supposed to be best 2 out of 3 in the finals, but we only played one game. And it took us an hour and we went to turns in that game. So it was a very lengthy Deken battle. Where I was just able to kind of come out on top in terms of roles. I got the villainous packs when I need them. He didn't get his when he needed them. And even though he was building up a massive field, he wasn't able to push through.
Ah. So did you actually complete the game or was it decided on life in the end?
We did complete it in the turns. It came down to the overtime turns, but I did get him down to 0 life eventually.
God, yeah. You must have almost had to be whisked off to accident and emergency after that. After an hour of Deken maths. That sounds.
My brain is definitely feeling a little bit like Jell-O at that point. That's yeah. For sure. Yeah.
What other cards did you bring with you? How many cards did you bring?
I brought 3 teams worth of cards, a Master Mold team, a Barry team, and a Thor team with a couple of sideboard cards for each, just in case I wanted to switch between day 1 and day 2 if something unexpected happened. But yeah, I guess it to some extent shows how far Typhoid Mary has fallen that I didn't even think to bring that as a sideboard card, apparently.
I think there are only a couple of incidences of her in the entire field.
Yeah, it's one of those things with so many force attack globals out there, and basically every team or every matchup has at least one. It's really hard to keep her in the field, but I guess one of the potential benefits is you don't really need to keep Typhoid Mary in the field on a Master Mold team because you're not really using it defensively as much as you're using it offensively. As long as you're able to blank the Deccan and line it up so that you have Villainous Pact on the same turn, that could be the difference. So I think there is definitely some consideration to putting that on the Master Mold team for sure.
Yeah. So obviously our information was that we think that of the final 8 teams in the World Championships, all of them were basically Master Mold teams. I'm not sure if you can
verify
that. Yeah, there were 7.
Was
okay.
There was one Barry Allen team that snuck through to the top 8. Yeah. I think there were 4 Master Mold teams in the top 8 during the U.S. Nationals and then 7 in the top 8 of the World Championships, including all 4 of the top 4.
And that doesn't suggest a particularly healthy meta. I mean, do you think that WizKids should act? And if so, should they be looking at banning any particular cards? And if so, which ones? I mean, is Master Mold the problem? Or as we've been talking about earlier on this on the podcast, is it actually more a Mr. Sinister situation here?
Yeah, there was lots of talk about that at the tournament for sure. I think the meta definitely doesn't feel overly healthy. I think that's fair to say, just given the volume of Master Mold teams. And I think from this point forward, Deken will be a tournament staple as well, as long as the meta stays with the current card pool. And I really can't see anything other than a Master Mold Deken team having much of a shot at winning a tournament until cards change. But I don't know if Master Mold itself is the problem. I think if I was to be in charge of the bans, which I'm definitely not, I would wait to see what happens with the next set and see what kind of health that brings to the game. We'll have the static field global back, which could make a big difference. It could make some control themes viable. So I would wait to see then before banning anything. But it is definitely true that Mr. Sinister is the great enabler of all the current strong teams, even Barry Allen teams or Thor teams. The first two turns of every single game I played for both opponents were the exact same. Everyone preps turn one, and Mr. Sinister's on their opponent's turn one. No matter what team they have, no matter the matchup, everyone's doing the exact same thing. And I think if you have a meta where literally no one is buying a character on turn one, that's probably not a fantastic sign for the health of the game. No. So something may need to be done about that, but I think probably safer to wait to see what the next set brings.
What's interesting is that some months ago, not very long ago, actually, we were talking about possible videos and that kind of thing that we could record. And one of the ideas that we were talking about is doing a video that asks the question of, is it ever a good idea to prep on turn one? And the jokey kind of intro would literally have been someone just saying, no.
Yeah.
And that would be the end of it, because at that point nobody did it, because it totally wrecks it was wrecking your bag. It completely puts all the dice out of sync. Now everybody's at it.
Yeah. And if you go second, my play during the whole tournament was to prep twice on turn.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. It's bag management is completely irrelevant in the current meta. When you have Mr. Sinister and you're able to do so much easy churning, I think the fact that it is too of any energy and not a specific energy like Atlantis was, makes such a world of difference that it is so, so easy to churn through your bag while getting blockers out to maintain a field presence at the same time. That, bag management is really strangely irrelevant.
Mm. Why do you think there was so few Barry Allens? I mean, we've looked at the stats and there was only one Barry Allen team in the 21 entrants that took part. Why do you think that was?
I honestly have no idea. I think, going into it, I expected a healthy mix of Master Mold and Barry Allen with maybe a sprinkling of Thor. But if I had to guess before the tournament, I would have thought that there would be more Barry Allen teams than any other type of team. Mm. But the complete opposite was true. I think there were three during the U.S. Nationals and only one during the World Championships the day after. During the U.S. Nationals, I thought maybe people were holding back and had planned to play Barry Allen and were saving it for the World Championships. But that didn't pan out either. So I honestly have no idea. I think to some extent people may have been a little bit scared of Deken as more of a hard counter in the Barry matchup. But definitely, from our playtesting, Barry Allen is no joke. It's your Turbo Barry Allen team is very strong, especially if you're able to roll sidekicks. So I'm a little bit surprised that we didn't see more people trying to run it.
It's just too Hail Mary, though, isn't it? It's just too, like, if you don't win, you're going to lose against Master Mold. If you don't win turn three or four, then there's not much after that, right?
Yeah.
And then in other matchups, it doesn't fare as well as Master Mold. Master Mold's very flexible and hard to deal with, whereas Barry Allen has counters in the Wonder Woman. Was there a vibe on the US Nats day that people were holding back? What was your opinion on that? Do you think that?
I don't think so, to be honest. I didn't really get the sense that people were holding back. I think it's a big enough kind of prize or title that I think people were trying to make a serious run at it. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be one of my complaints about the format of the weekend as a whole. I'm not a fan of having the US Nats and the World Championships back to back, basically the same field, the same tournament 2 days in a row. One definitely prestigious title, but one definitely much more prestigious title. So it's it feels a little bit strange, to be honest. It would have been nicer if they had kind of thought of a different side event to run, or run US Nationals at one of the big conferences that took place in the months ahead.
Yeah.
But it definitely didn't seem like people were holding back for sure.
Yeah, it did seem a shame. I mean, from us, looking from across the pond, you basically had two big tournaments with essentially the same group of people playing both of them, which is a bit of a shame because it does take some of the sheen off both tournaments, I think, if you just kind of got it to one event taking place on consecutive days. But hopefully next year we'll be more COVID-free and it'll be easier to separate them out.
It does make for an interesting kind of meta, though, by the fact that you have to kind of... I mean, I've started to take to tournaments only one team, so I can't change. Because I've made the mistake in the past of changing the day before.
Yeah.
Or the morning of. So not taking enough cards. So it's interesting that people obviously had either in their mind, because if you were going to take a limited amount, would you have taken the Deacon beforehand? So that was obviously on people's minds.
Yeah, no, true. That's true. It's I think there were certainly a lot of people there who brought like all of their modern collection with them to the tournament.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they wouldn't have been able to swap to Deacon as easily, for sure, because I don't think it was a card that was on a lot of people's radars until the U.S. Nationals, mm-hmm. At least of the people who were in the event. I think it caught a lot of people by surprise. So if they had not brought, you know, enough of a card pool, they wouldn't have been able to make that change, and we may have had a different outcome.
They should have been watching our YouTube channel, and they would have known all about it.
Yeah. There you go.
Expertly, I clinged on to life. Sorry, clung. I clung on to life.
Do you remember UK Nats, was it 2017? Where me and you played the Bard on the first day for qualifiers.
Yeah.
And then people were running around, it was at UK Games Expo, which is a board game convention. And people were running around the expo trying to buy packs with the Bard in it.
Oh, God.
Yep.
Because everyone had bought Green Goliath Hulk as their main win condition.
Yeah.
I mean, Spud got 1 and 2. Playing the Bard, so I was like, okay, we need to play that tomorrow.
Yeah. Where, it was like a qualifier,
all of those
it?
People
yeah.
get super rare master molds from? I didn't know that many super rare master molds actually existed.
So it's interesting, yeah. It's interesting who bought what and when.
Yeah. And so what was it like? I mean, obviously we talked about there was a lot of master molds. What was it like playing all these mirror matches?
Oof, yeah. I only played 3 different archetypes of teams.
Wow.
In total across the 2 days. So I played against 3 super rare Thor teams. I played against 1 unexpected common anti-monitor Deathbird team.
Oh, that's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Where you KO your own stuff and your opponent has to KO their stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And every other game I played was a Master Mold mirror match across the 2 days. So it was almost entirely Master Mold on Master Mold. Wow. Games, so definitely got a lot of practice in that matchup, and like the games went well for me. It's I didn't really feel in danger too much, and I think that was one of the benefits of having Deacon, but also one of the benefits of doing so much playtesting. I think even folks that did switch to Master Mold, I don't think had quite as much of experience in running the team. And although it's definitely not the most complicated team in the history of the game for sure, but there are nuances in how to play it in terms of when you leave psychics in the field or when you KO Master Mold and when you don't. And I think a lot of that just comes with experience and practice. So I felt like I had whether it was true or not, I felt like I had a small edge in some of these matches just because of all the reps I was able to get with you folks in advance.
Well, one of the things we talked about early on was on that first turn when you get Master Mold out, if you attack with it, because you have to attack to make a token, do you then KO it? Or if your opponent, because the thing that I was doing was just letting it through, so Master Mold will go back into the bag.
Yeah.
So there's a difficult decision point where on that first turn, do you KO the Master Mold to generate another token? Or do you let the Master Mold go through and take that damage? And that decision is obviously very subjective on depending on what your opponent's playing and the level of Master Mold and where your bag management is. So that kind of decision point, unless you've done that rep several times, you won't be as good at. It is all playtesting. It was all the hard work you did beforehand.
Yeah, and I saw some people making a few, I don't know if it's really an error, but maybe a small misplay as well, going second on their first turn, I think, or on their second turn when they actually get to the point of purchasing Master Mold. I think there's just that kind of reflex that, okay, I'm going to use the Dark Phoenix Global because I want sidekicks in my prep. And I'm going to buy Master Mold and I'm going to prep them. But you leave your field completely empty in that point. And if your opponent is lucky enough to buy Master Mold or have draw Master Mold on their third turn, you know, they can swing through for easily 13, 14, 15 damage. And then doesn't matter if you have Deacon on your team or not, because you're below the 7 life threshold. So I think a lot of people were not necessarily thinking about some of those small decisions as well, which could be the difference between a win and a loss when everyone's playing the same team.
James, you were going to say something.
I was just going to ask about, but I think really you've answered it. I think there was some discussion on Discord about how with these mirror matches, and maybe also because of Mr. Sinister making the bag management a bit of a non-issue, that it becomes, you know, a question of some people might say who goes first, but I think perhaps not so much that, but who sort of misses their role first. But I think there's a lot more to it than that, and I think you've alluded to it, that, you know, what you've learned from the playtesting and stuff like that reduces that luck element, or you know, it teaches you how to deal with it. Do you think that's fair? I mean, how much luck is there in these mirror matches, do you think?
Yeah, hard to quantify. I think it definitely feels like a meta where you're one bad roll away from losing at any moment. It definitely does feel like you're just sitting on a knife's edge all the time, which is a great feeling.
Not good for the heart.
Not at all. But I think you are right. I think there is something to be said for some of the small nuances. I don't know how much that adds up or kind of dispels some of the luck and randomness of the rolls. But I think, like with all teams, playtesting and just exposure to different types of game states really prepares you so that you don't have to make these difficult decisions in a stressful moment under time pressure. You can kind of figure that stuff out in advance. And in the long course of a tournament, when you're looking for consistency being one of the key things, I think those things do add up and kind of give you a little bit of an extra edge that allow you to bounce back from bad rolls even when you do have them.
Mm.
Good answer.
Totally. You've talked about playtesting. You know, have you got any tips for people going into a major tournament, you know, that you've learned from your rookie appearance? Not bad for a first timer.
Yeah, I guess my advice would be to do playtesting. It's strangely, it's something that I hadn't done a lot of in the past. In the big 2020 year where there were a lot of big online tournaments, I did have some success in that year, but I didn't do a lot of playtesting. And I think that showed when it came to the 2020 online worlds, and I had a pretty bad showing in that tournament. I felt very confident going in, but I think it was overconfidence, and I didn't do the preparation and the reps that were required to really compete at that level when everyone is on their game. So I really wanted to make a concerned effort to avoid that this time. So my strategy was to find four of the best players in the world who aren't participating in the tournament, and getting them to be my coaches. So
sadly, you ended up with us.
Annoyingly, they weren't available. You have to play us and beat us about 10 minutes.
Yeah, but, I mean, go on, Jay. Go on, Ben.
Well, I was going to ask about the fact that I don't know. I mean, I know me and Spug played a lot of the Barry team against you. Spug's obviously more optimized for being fast. And then me, I was kind of using Barry as a win condition, but then trying to stop you from doing what you were doing before getting to Barry. Do you wish you'd done more Master Mold versus Master Mold playtesting?
Yeah, I was going to ask that.
Oh, good question. Yeah, I guess that is the one. I did a little bit of Master Mold playtesting, but what I didn't do was Master Mold versus Master Mold playtesting where both players had to Ken. And I think that's one matchup in particular that was by far the hardest type of matchup that I played in the tournament that really gave me the most trouble. And I think that's something that I wish I had done a little bit more playtesting of, and maybe that would have led to including Typhoid Mary on the team or making some different card choices. But for some reason, I guess I didn't think that people would clue into the value of it, which is silly because it's a great card. But yeah, I guess that's the one matchup in particular that I didn't test enough of.
People have talked about it, haven't they? But it hasn't actually been very visible in tournaments so far because I think it's only really in the last few weeks and months post-rotation that these huge swingy teams have suddenly become such a big thing, it seems.
I think it's one of those cards where I think people initially wrote it off because the belief was with that Clayface, it would be too hard to keep it in your use pile. And I know I definitely wrote it off as being, you know, too expensive, too hard to keep in the use pile, too situational. But it's one of those things, once you start playing it on the mat and you realize how thin your bag can be and how consistently thin it can be, it's really not that hard to keep it in your use pile. And if you really need to, you know, you just spend a turn to buy another one. You put the offense on hold. And once you have two rotating, it is almost a guarantee that you will have one there every turn for the rest of the game.
I was going to ask, sorry, you mentioned the anti-monitor team, and I was quite interested in that. How was that? Because that is sort of partly designed to, it has Deathbird, which does 3 damage when one of your characters with attack of more than 3 is KO'd, right? So defense, all of your tokens have defense, sorry. So it's almost designed to make a mess of Master Mold teams and KO a bunch of tokens, ideally, I suppose. How was it? How was the matchup?
Yeah, a guy named Ian was running that team. He was, I think, from a contingent of local players from Mississippi who came out to the tournament. I think they were there in 2019 as well, so I'm told.
They're nice guys.
And it was in the top four of U.S. Nationals where I played him with that team. So he obviously had a really good day with that team as well. It was one of those things where both our matches were really quick, and I won them both really fast. And I think the problem was with Mr. Sinister, you're able to get enough sidekicks out that anti-monitor is not really doing a lot of damage. I'll just KO my sidekicks, or I'll KO Master Mold, and you're helping me do what I wanted to do anyway, and I'm producing more tokens, and I'm rolling it consistently. And I really only had to buy Master Mold and Villainous Pact in those games and just use all my energy to feed sidekicks with Mr. Sinister, and it really wasn't much of a problem. So it was one of those things that seemed like it was going to be a big issue on paper, but then when I played the matchup, it went a lot smoother than I expected.
Master Mold doesn't quite give it enough time to get traction, and you're obviously providing them with the same global, your opponent with the same global that you're using to produce the sidekicks, which you then KO. So okay, but I like it anyway.
Yeah, it was cool. It was one of those unexpected teams. Now, the first day of the tournament in particular, the field was a lot more varied than I think a lot of us expected. I think there were three Barry Allen teams, five Master Mold teams, three super rare Thor teams, and then I think like 9 or 10 just completely random unexpected teams. So in addition to the anti-monitor, Shadow Meld is running a very interesting super rare Harley Quinn team that was very control-oriented. There was another player running, I can't remember the rarity, but a Hawk Girl team, where the one where Hawk Girl gets +1 attack for each character in your opponent's field, and was using that in comparison, in addition to Villainous Pact, just in recognition that everyone had these giant board states, and just kind of pushing these giant Hawk Girls through, which was kind of interesting and unexpected. Yeah. So there's definitely some creativity there. And then in the World Championships, a little bit less creativity.
Well, I mean, we've joked, Dana, about us taking credit. We can't take any credit, really, because it's obviously your exceptional play that's taken you to these high spots. I mean, you won your record. You were telling us earlier, the record was ridiculous over the course of the weekend. How many matches did you play and how many did you win?
Yeah, I got really lucky for sure. Things went smoothly. I won 15 out of my 16 matchups, only losing the last one against Laurier, who played excellent. And in terms of wins and losses, I think I went 20 wins and 3 losses over the 2 days. And it was just unfortunate that two of those losses, again, were in the final against Laurier.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, that is an exceptional performance. And you don't just do that just by being lucky. So many congratulations for an incredible performance, and it's been really great to get your insights into how your team went and your preparation and that kind of stuff. It would have been really useful for people, and it's been fantastic to have you on the podcast, Dana. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, and thank you so much for you folks for your support in advance. I know you're downplaying your involvement, but you folks are so generous in donating hours and hours and hours of your time to help me prepare. And it really would have been a very different outcome if you didn't do that. So a very big thank you from me.
It was literally a pleasure.
No, well done. Yeah, well done. Congrats, you really well. Very proud. If I couldn't do it, I'm glad you did it.
Well, thank you.
All right, well, shall we move on to the next segment? Okay, well, one of the things that happened over the course of the weekend was a fan appreciation event which took place in Memphis, and part of that, they had a spoiler reveal in the form of some new cards that are coming in the Secret Wars set. We've seen a few so far, and WizKids have decided to put out a few more. We have seen a Full Art Distraction was revealed, which has got some really cool art of for some reason Spider-Man and the Green Goblin playing
baseball.
I don't America. Know what's going on there. But that looks really cool. But one of the interesting ones that came out was a new Invisible Woman. We know that she's coming in Secret Wars. Finally, we're getting a version of Invisible Woman after having three other members of the Fantastic Four in the original Avengers versus X-Men set, but no Invisible Woman. Now she's coming, and now we've seen another version of her card as revealed in the fan appreciation event. She's a two-cost mask, and she has stats of 025, 023, 012. Now I've done that the wrong way around, haven't I? It must be 012, 023, and 025.
No.
And it says Invisible Woman gets plus one attack for each of your other Fantastic Four character dies. But then she has a global pay a mask. Target character die must block this turn.
Yay.
It's a force block. Ben, it's a force block.
Yay. There's no Danny, though, still.
I mean, how much of a difference do you think this card might make going forward?
Mary Shazam.
Yeah.
It makes Mary Shazam a lot stronger.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, make that strong enough, maybe.
Maybe.
I was going to say it makes force attacks a little bit weaker, but in the same set we've got distraction, so it's kind of irrelevant. But she's great, though. Two-cost mask with zero fielding costs.
Yeah.
Good defense. She's an auto-include on a lot of teams.
Yeah.
Yeah, surely. Yeah, very,
I like
very
the fact that she's a fairly cheap character as well.
Yeah, no, it'll be, it's really cool. It feels like WizKids maybe have decided that she's been for too long neglected. So let's make Invisible Woman relevant to Dice Masters and give her some good abilities, because that ability is definitely going to be used on Mary Shazam teams. I mean, it'd be interesting to see, because obviously now we know that with the Distraction Global coming back in Secret Wars, a Force Block Global coming back in Secret Wars. We know we have the Gladiator. Nearly forgot to do it. the Gladiator Global.
Or Hawkman.
Which says, Hawkman, yeah, who says, pay a fist, target character die, can't be affected by globals or whatever it is. No, your character dies can't be affected by globals, isn't it? So that will be very interesting. What difference is this going to make? I mean, is Mary Shazam suddenly going to come amazing? Is there going to be loads of Kang Globals coming forward?
Yeah.
Peter, what's your view?
Both of those, actually. it's definitely going to boost Mary Shazam. And you're going to have to bring a Kang, I think.
Yeah.
Because Kang is not affected by the Hawkman Global.
Yeah, because it does not target.
Doesn't target.
Yes.
Well, Dana almost had Kang on his team to stop Barry Allen's, which is a pretty good choice to rotate it out. But yeah, it was very annoying for Barry Allen, so I can imagine it'll be even better now.
Yeah, because if you only have the one huge beat stick to worry about, it's so much easier to stop with Kang.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Distraction Global is very good, not just for defensive purposes. Well, I suppose not just defensive purposes on your opponent's turn, but also if they're forcing one of your characters to attack,
yeah,
you can keep stuff in the field, which Hawkman can't affect.
Yeah.
So if you force, if they force something to attack, then you can bring it back safely. Keep stuff in the field, like Pip the Troll, which makes globals more expensive, or Typhoid Mary, the blanks or something.
Yeah. And things like Spider-Man, you know, the spins down stuff when he attacks. Because obviously he's less relevant now, because there's no way of pulling him back. He has to go through if the opponent decides to let him, which they probably will.
The other thing with him is that there's any kind of spin down removal, which was amazing for a while, now just gives them energy from Mr. Sinister as well.
But it's going to be better, because people are going to play more control that wants to stay in the field. So your Spider-Man becomes more relevant again.
Yes, control is much more relevant.
Yeah.
Does Thor, who deals damage when you field characters, and or Colossus, who just does damage at the end of your turn for every level 2 or level 3 there's none of that. But, I mean, do those become relevant now, do you think, going forward, Ben?
Yeah, I think that Distraction Global opens up new possibilities. I mean, Master Mold, it just might be the Master Mold is way too strong anyway.
Yeah.
But stuff like the Thor, stuff like the Batman and Jubilee combo, the rare Batman, which deals damage every time one of your things is carried, is much better now as well.
Yeah.
Because you can keep it in the field.
Yeah, I've got to say, I'm excited. See, I'm I've not been pleased at the way that this championships has played out with so many of one card. It feels like, you know, we're back to almost the Yanti days in terms of everyone using the same.
I'm not even sure Yanti was that bad. I think Bard probably is the last one where just whole tournaments were just that. Yeah.
And I guess what's happened is that this World Championships has just fell at an inopportune moment between sort of sets, you know, with a very thin card pool. But, you know, when Secret Wars comes, I think it's really going to open it up again. And if, you know, if Master Mold does get banned, for example, then I think we're going to see a much more interesting, balanced.
That's why I wouldn't ban it just yet.
Yeah, first see how the next set plays out and then consider banning it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. What do we think about our first, well, our first proper sight of an epic basic action? Now, this has been talked about before, and we have talked about this on a previous podcast. But now Jimmy Darwin O'Brien from WizKids has talked about this epic basic action, but I don't think we've seen it before. And epic basic actions are going to be something that you can only buy or use once per turn. And in order to, is it in order to use one or in order to buy one, you have to have at least a four cost character.
I think in order to use it.
It's just to use, yeah.
Use it, okay. So you can buy it before you've got a four cost character, but you can't use it if you've, unless you've got one. And this one says the Darkhold is an epic basic action, it costs 5. And it says, oh, and it goes back to its card when you've used it.
Yeah.
That's right, isn't it? But this one says pay X life, draw and roll X dice. Now, James, you must be getting excited about this, are you?
In fact, no. Oh, something that costs 5 to... I mean, sure. No, I'm actually not. No. I'd rather spend my 5 elsewhere.
It seems like it's going to be too hard to line up at a 5 cost.
Right.
When we first heard this ability, it's pretty crazy. Like, you could pay 19 life to roll 19 dice.
Yeah,
it's pretty good as long as you win, right?
Yeah. But you got to have 19 dice to roll.
My experience of investigative journalism, which cost the same, and if you didn't buy it in the first few turns, it was just
useless.
Yeah, just prepping. You know, you might as well just have a prep global.
Especially with Mr. Sinister, you're not going to have that much to roll.
No, potentially not.
Yeah,
but you kind of feel like late game. Late game.
I like to see Dr. Doom on the card.
Get to that in a sec. We'll get to that in a sec, James. But just on the epic basic action, am I right in thinking that there is coming, an ability where you can use a global to reroll stuff?
What
is that?
There was a...
Really? I don't know.
There's a global to reroll villains, but...
Yeah, there's a Rocket Raccoon which lets you awaken roll stuff.
Oh, yeah. But...
pay a mask on bat signal for rerolling villains, but nothing like parallax, if that's what you mean.
Oh, okay. There's not. Okay. Yeah. I was, for some reason, I had it in my head that was coming. That would make that ability even more bonkers, wouldn't it?
I think Mr. Sinister is a bit like parallax, actually. I come think it's the Sinister Global, Parallax Global. And it's interesting to see Ben conflicted because, you know, he wants
Parallax breaks the game. Because you sit there watching other people roll. What I don't want to do is sit there watching other people just roll for days. Like, I don't want your turn to go on longer than any of my turns in the entire game added up.
Fair
enough. Miss Sinister just lets you, it's just Professor X, isn't it?
Yeah. More like that.
Yeah.
I love Professor X.
Yeah.
It's dumbed down, Professor X. It requires, you know, doesn't it? I mean, if you wanted big stuff, you had to sort of plan it out. So you'd go, you know, 2-cost mask.
Yeah.
You know, mutation, buy your 6 or without breaking ramp, mutation.
Yeah, but you still have the variance of, like, you might just miss your rolls.
Yeah.
With Parallax, you basically can't miss your rolls.
Yeah, I'm not defending Parallax, but I would say that there was a bit more to PXG than there is to Mr. Sinister, especially with the generic.
The thing I hate most about Parallax is you had to watch your opponent play a game while you did nothing.
You must have absolutely loved Patrick's
horrible
team.
A couple of other things to note, probably, that we should mention before we round this little section up is a new global, which is a sort of a twist on the collector global, where you pay a mask and field a character once per turn. This is on Madeline Pryor rare and Magic rare, only with different types of energy. So Madeline Pryor is pay a mask, Magic is play a bolt, but you pay the energy and one life once per turn, field a sidekick from your use pile, which to me feels like a bit of a trap in a way. Ben, do you like this?
No.
Okay.
You want to play collector?
At the moment, yes.
Maybe this is the way they're going.
It's maybe
a powerful thing, isn't it?
It is, but although if you put this and the collector on a team, you can do twice per turn, which does make it more interesting. And you can also dissuade your opponent from using it, maybe, and then
that's true.
Get an advantage because they'll be like, "Oh, I don't want to pay a life," and then you're like, "Huh, I have all these sidekicks, and I'll smash your face in."
I feel like the pay a life is enough of a punishment on top of the once per turn, enough of a restriction. I don't know why you all said the once per turn.
Maybe. I mean, I suppose if you use it in conjunction with a
Lalandra,
one of those things. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, then Ben is going
to. You want to pay three life to field a sidekick? I don't think so.
No.
I'd like to point out that one of the two cards you mentioned with this global is, what was it, Madeline Pryor?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Who is the Goblin Queen. And the ability says, not the global ability, but the ability says, while Madeline Pryor is active, your psychic dice get +1 attack, which is a wicked callback to Green Goblin from AVX.
Oh, nice. Yes.
Flying Psychic Squad, which was Goblin Lord, not Goblin Queen, but Goblin Lord.
Oh, nice.
And he was a 3-cost bolt, which gave your psychics +1 attack and +1 defense. I like that. Oof. That's surely intentional.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. And I think the other one we should just mention is very quickly, only because James likes the picture, God Emperor Doom, a 6-cost shield. While God Emperor Doom is active at the start of the attack step, target character dies, attack becomes 0 till the end of turn. That could be an interesting way of dealing with Mary Shazam.
I guess so. Then they can pump it after that, though, right?
Yeah, they could.
But it says 0 until the end of turn.
But then they can't use Gladiator Global if they want to bump it afterwards.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or you could use this and then use Arch Nemesis Global and KO whatever you reduce to 0.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah, it's fun. 6 costs probably too much, but it's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was actually the Darkhold art that I was referring to.
The Darkhold. Oh, apologies. Okay. No, that is good. Yeah, that is good. It's I do like that. That feels like it's channeling almost the old Secret Wars from like the 1990s, but or wherever it was, late 80s. Good stuff. All right. Well, there's some spoilers. If you want to see them in full, then do go to our website because there's a whole definitive gallery of spoilers, provided that James has updated it by the time this comes out.
No pressure.
Yes.
No. All right, let's move on to our final segment. Okay, so we're just going to round up with a little bit of AOB, and Dice Fight's going to be first up on the agenda. This is going to send James scurrying to the Dice Fight page.
It's I've got it open already.
Thursday night event. That takes place 3 rounds, 9 p.m. start UK time, 10 p.m. in the rest of Central Europe. It's 3 rounds, friendly games only, and a variety of different traffic lights, if you like red, orange, or green. James, are you ready?
Yes, I actually did my homework this time.
Well done.
You say friendly. It is a friendly atmosphere, but sometimes the games can be more competitive, but this time... They are, it says 10 in 10, 10 by 10, 10 from 10, whatever you want to call it. So that's 10 cards, 10 sets, I believe.
Not modern, presumably.
No, it's silver, in fact, which is silver, from right. Green Arrow, The Flash onwards and includes modern, for better or for worse. But it's orange, in which Master Mold is Ben.
Yeah.
In case you were wondering. And that's on the 22nd, which would be presumably this coming Thursday. And the following week is Keywords Only, which is a really friendly one because that's green and golden. And You can only have cards on your team which bear a keyword. I assume that's just the team, not the basic actions.
Good stuff. We'll put a link to that Discord server in the show notes if you want to get involved with a bit of Dice Fight action. On another front, we are coming to the end, really, with Worlds behind us. We have come to the end of a very competitive season where everything that we've been doing here at DM United has been focused on competitive play. We've always had a focus towards that end of the game, but obviously over the last few weeks and months, we've had Worlds coming up, and also we've had new sets to wade through. And now we're at a point where maybe things might slow down a bit, certainly on the competitive front. So if you've got things that you want us to feature or talk about, then do let us know. Are there particular subject areas in the game that you want to hear a bit more about, that you want to hear discussed by us over here at DM United? We'd love to hear from you. And if you've got any other points that you want to make about anything else that we've featured on the podcast, then do get in touch. It's always great to hear from listeners, and you might get your message read out in a future episode. James, which is the best email address, that's what they're called, to use?
It is hello@dmunited.eu.
Otherwise, it's been great to have your company. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe using your favorite podcast app so you can be the first to know about a new episode. We will see you again next time. Bye-bye.
Cheery bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.